This is the August 22nd, 2014 edition of WFAE Talks. This week, a judge rules no taxpayer-funded private school vouchers for you. We'll discuss the multitude of reasons a Wake County judge says vouchers approved by lawmakers last year are unconstitutional. We'll also talk a little garbage. Charlotte and Mecklenburg County officials are in the early stages of considering a pay-as-you-throw-away garbage bag system. Plus, I-77 toll lanes, always an easy subject to discuss. Hello, I'm Greg Collar, WFA's news director. I'm joined by education reporter Lisa Miller. Hi, Lisa.
Hey.
And money and influence reporter Tom Bullock is in for Ben Bradford. Tom is affectionately called Tommy Boy sometimes by yours truly.
No.
No?
No, I'm not. I think right there, I think actually our listeners got the first ever Tommy Boy.
Sometimes I hear Ben or Michael.
He actually once,
or
this is
once
true,
Lisa.
He once not only called me Lisa, he once called me Greg. Yeah. I thought that was rather right. Affectionate.
That's right. That's right. I get the names too. But Greg was the best.
I think that was like my first week.
Yes. I'm terrible with names. Okay. This is supposed to be about you all, not about me. This section.
Well, we don't know who we all are. I mean, that's the problem. We keep calling us different names.
Well, you're making the public media rounds today here. WFAE Talks Now. Earlier, you were part of a taping of Off the Record on public TV station WTBI.
That's why I'm all dressed up.
It was on the record, though.
It was, yes. Yeah. I do have to say that has to be the strangest name for a panel discussion show.
Oh, come on.
Show.
Let's just say it's the dumbest name. Okay. No offense, but I think it's a... Everything's on the record, on off the record.
Yeah,
it makes no sense.
Off the record, I just almost expect like the censor bar to like be, you know, put up over our mouths and you hear nothing but elevator music as we talk.
Well, later on today's podcast, we'll talk about stories both of you are working on. But first, vouchers.
6, fails to guard and maintain the right of the people to the privilege of education by siphoning money from the public schools in favor of private schools.
That's Wake County Superior Court Judge Robert Hobgood with reason number 6 for why the General Assembly's Opportunity Scholarship Program is unconstitutional. Lisa, you covered this. He gave a pretty lengthy ruling from the bench.
He did. I mean, it was very strongly worded, too. He basically said on all accounts that vouchers for private schools are unconstitutional.
And he said it's, used language like, he said it was siphoning money off from public schools to private education. It goes and it's going into schools that discriminate against others but
on account of their religion. One of the big ones was that it goes to, you're taking public money, putting it to private schools, where there's no accountability as far as curriculum, as far as other standards, as Tom pointed out, as far as certification for teachers as well.
Mm-hmm. Did you almost forget my name there? I'm wondering if the thread's continuing.
No, my mind is just slowly working.
One of the things, Lisa, that I thought was really interesting on that too was the fact that the judge basically called out the General Assembly. I mean, they moved $10 million of school money over to this voucher program, and they did it saying, you know, it would offer a better education and it would save the state money. And the judge came back and said, you don't get to push these kids to other schools. They deserve, and no matter how expensive it is, they deserve a quality public education. And if you can't do that, that means you have to spend more money, not ship them off to public school or to private schools.
Yeah, basically, I mean, there's this case, Leandro, where the state is required to give students a sound basic education. And he's saying by taking a lot of these low-income students, you are just saying, okay, they're not our responsibility anymore. We're going to shunt them off to the private school system and have them off our hands right now. Yeah, he was very, you're right, he was very...
He was biting
to the General Assembly, for sure.
Anytime that a judge comes out with, you know, here are my 10 least favorite things about your case, and that's why I'm going to rule against you on all of them. I mean, he was pretty comprehensive.
Now that is one view, but supporters of this program would argue that our public education system is failing a lot of low-income students.
For sure. I mean, I talked with Daryl Allison. He's head of Parents for Educational freedom in North Carolina. And he's saying, look, you know, you by if you are in a school districted for a school and it is not doing well, you don't have any choices if you're a low-income parent. You want your kid in a school that is performing well. And so vouchers are a possibility to give you that chance. So,
but the I guess the other argument, I think the, Judge Hobgood, he mentioned, is siphoning off from public education into private schools, that by doing this, you're dismantling the foundation that is supposed to serve the overall public good.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't exactly say dismantling, mm-hmm. but yes, that is the direction he was going into by saying you're basically sucking funds from the public school system to fund a private system that you have no say in or control over. So, you know, and he's saying this is not for a public good.
If this program ultimately does go forward, how do they decide who gets these $4,200 vouchers?
They go to low-income families.
But is it first come, first serve on low or?
No, it's not. You go through a lottery system. First, okay. They make sure that you're eligible. And
I think it's based off the low and reduced,
yeah,
or free,
exactly,
and reduced school lunch program. That's how they, mm-hmm. the very first echelon of people, and then they have to apply. And
yeah, exactly. And I think you can't make over a certain amount. But if you do make, you know, over a certain amount of that, then you get partial funding for the vouchers.
But money was supposed to have gone out already. But there was a hiccup this week, and there money.
Yeah, there were a couple hiccups. Yeah, exactly. There was a hiccup last week, and so it didn't go out last week. And then there was a hiccup earlier this week. It was supposed to go out yesterday morning, mm-hmm. and as of 10:23 a.m., the judge ruled no money could go out. But it hadn't gone out at this point. So now they don't have to go back and try to get money back at this
but
point.
But I love the hiccup is just so funny to me. It's such a strange thing. It looks like they were racing the judge's decision to try to get this money out because it would be,
exactly,
harder to get back in. So what holds everything up? It's a routing error. Somebody punched in the wrong number for a bank account that made it so the money could not, you know, work its way around the system. And
wow.
it's one of these random little facts that when you're covering news, you just have to scratch your head and say, that sounds more like the plot from a Good Wife episode than it does from like school policy, but it's kind of what happened.
Well, this case is not done. It's going to be appealed to the Supreme Court. Is there any indication about how fast this appeal will be heard, or is this going to be something that a new Supreme Court after the election will be taking up?
I think it's going to have to be heard by this one because, as Lisa pointed out, some students are waiting to start school. In these private schools, a lot of them actually have already begun school. And, you know, the parents have a pretty clear case where they've already bought the uniforms, they've already paid for the books, the kids are already enrolled. If they can't pay that tuition, which they thought they would be getting from the state, then they have to pull their kids back and put them back in a public school, and it's disruptive. So I don't know what you think, Lisa, but I would imagine that they would have to, you know, work relatively quickly to hear the case and decide which way to go forward, because there's a real timeline here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of kids in limbo at this point.
Okay, on to the next topic, garbage. And although there's obviously some people who would argue that Judge Hobgood's ruling is garbage, that's not what we're going to continue discussing. We're going to be discussing the topic of garbage. There is some consideration now underway of a plan for Charlotte and Mecklenburg County to go to a pay-as-you-bag system for garbage. Basically, the idea is the less waste you have, the less you'll have to pay. And it encourages people to recycle. How much you pay depends on, we're going to be doing some follow-up stories to try to figure out, based on Charlotte's tipping fees at the landfill it uses, how much would residents pay per bag. But where this program is in other cities, they buy these bags for anywhere from 50 cents to $2 per bag. So.
Yeah, and I don't know how this program, the nuts and bolts, how it would work out or anything, but I do want to say I am okay, Greg, with you subsidizing my trash.
With you, me subsidizing your
yes,
trash.
Yes. I think I have less than you do, so yeah, I'm all right.
I don't know if I'd make that assumption. We recycle a lot, but I'm skeptical on everything, and the skeptical part of me.
Time for the backstory.
Yes, wonders if. Yeah, I think back to water usage, for example. When there was a drought 5-6 years ago, and here, and also, you know, obviously in Georgia was really affected. People responded. They reduced their use of water. Well, guess what happened? They lost a lot of money, okay, in there, and so water rates really went up. So I guess I worry about some of the same thing, the same thing happening. Not saying it would, but that's a concern of that would be a concern of mine as a consumer, as a taxpayer. But I think it's an interesting argument on both sides. Certainly, I could understand why someone who doesn't have kids, why should they or is living alone, why should they pay the same garbage as someone who has three or four kids?
But here's the funny thing. I mean, I understand exactly what you're saying, and I think this raises all kinds of questions. Nobody is saying that the fee that we pay for trash removal will be wiped out and replaced
That's an unanswered question. Exactly.
Right now, it's looking more like it's augmented. And if you think about it, I mean, if you go and buy a bag, a box of Hefties at Harris Teeter right now, you can buy, 50 for 15, 20 mm-hmm. bucks? If you're talking $2 a bag,
that's a lot of money.
50 cents a bag, it's a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And if you think about it in terms of, we were just talking about, low-income students. Imagine for a low-income family, if you suddenly have what is in essence a regressive tax on garbage bags, I mean, what ends up happening? Yeah. I just think there's a lot. I'm not saying it's a bad idea. Mm-hmm. I think it's interesting. I think the side of it that may or may not, depending on what happens, encourage recycling is great. I totally understand that landfills are finite and we all don't want them necessarily in our backyard. Mm-hmm. But there's some real implications here for people when it comes to, now you're talking my trash bags cost, as much as a gallon of gas.
Right.
It's a little tricky.
And I think I phrased that in the I feel like maybe I'm subsidizing your garbage right now.
I
phrased that completely wrong.
So. Yes, you did. Yeah. I was just going to let you sink, though, and let our listeners come to that own conclusion.
And now all of our listeners know what an editing session goes.
But the stages of this is preliminary, but I think it's really interesting because it seems to get a lot of it's gotten a lot of attention. And I don't know. What do you all any I don't even really know, other than I know they're considering this. And this company is based in Raleigh, by the way. It's called Zero Waste. They're mainly fund some cities in
Worcester,
Massachusetts. Mass. That's their biggest client. They have some cities in Northeast and the Midwest. One of them, I understand, I just learned Charleston, West Virginia, where I used to work. So we're going to be trying to figure out how the system is implemented in other states and what the pros and cons are. All right, next topic. I-77 toll lanes. I thought this was...
I love this story. I love this story.
Of course, there's a big debate on what were they thinking? These toll lanes and a report was issued for the state that said that the cost could be something like $21.
$20. $9 one way, $11 back for the tolls.
Yeah, to go from
Mooresville to Charlotte.
Mooresville to Charlotte, exit 36. And there's a lot of people have a problem with that if they use the toll lanes. There's a lot of unanswered questions about this private contractor that would be charging these tolls and helping build the expanded lanes at a reduced cost to the state. There's been a lot of charges of secrecy in this throughout this controversy. And then this week, a group that's called Widen I-77, group that promotes the widening of I-77 but is against these toll lanes, revealed that this private company, Cintra, and other State Department of Transportation officials are going to be meeting with representatives of Davidson, Mooresville, Huntersville, maybe Cornelius, but basically those string of towns along.
Mooresville already met it sounds
yeah.
like.
Okay. Yeah. It was Cornelius, yeah. Davidson, and Huntersville.
Okay. They pointed out these are not going to be public meetings and that there would be, to avoid making these public meetings, that there would be public officials, no more than two, going in to meet with them at once. I think it's gave its own little debate.
Yeah, and I think it's worth pointing out, that's not just what Widen I-77 claimed. That's actually what happened.
Like, it is.
There's a law in North Carolina that says that any meeting that has a quorum of an elected body has to be an open public meeting and it has to be announced. Mm-hmm. So what they did is they made sure that for what it was, again, Davidson, Huntersville, and Cornelius, that no more than two of the elected representatives were at these meetings because three would make a quorum and they'd have to be open. So it clearly was an effort not to open this up to wider public comment.
Well, after Widen I-77 put out its announcement about these meetings that day, the State Department of Transportation also put out its own press release announcing these meetings. but didn't say whether or not they were public or closed. It just said the purpose of the meetings is to help dispel repeated misinformation about the project and to get feedback for an upcoming public meeting. So I asked, I responded back to this press release, Jen Thompson, Department of Transportation. I emailed her back and said, are these public meetings? Her response, Greg, no new information is being presented at these meetings. Town officials have requested them, and the information shared is public-facing on our project page.
I'm not sure what that last part means.
That just means that it's written down and people can read it.
Okay. So,
is that a phrase people use, public-facing?
It's a silly phrase.
All right. Oh, yeah. Wow.
Well, okay, but she didn't answer my question. And I wrote back and said, okay, are these meetings public? She responded back. They are for public officials to aid in planning for a future community meeting. Again, I responded, are they public meetings? Yes or no? And she finally just responded back one word, no. Finally, after all that, I mean, it's ridiculous to go through that runaround about a simple question. Just be upfront about it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it begs the question of whether or not, why are they being so cagey about it?
Yeah. When public information officers are being cagey about giving you information, it makes you more skeptical of what they're saying.
Absolutely. And I think it's also really funny that it's like, you know, there's no new information. There's nothing. Move along. There's nothing to see here. So then why are you having three of them all on the same night as fast as you can?
And of course, there was a lot of media at these meetings. They did end up actually opening some of them because there's so much media. And I'm sure the public officials didn't like cast as these as a group that is trying to hide from the public either. And many of them, and they're not. Many of them have the same questions as the general public too. And didn't seem to care.
And Centra representatives were at these meetings, right?
Yes. Yes.
Which is a big thing because, mm-hmm. I mean, we haven't been able to talk to Centra. I mean, you have not heard much from Centra at all. Mm-hmm. So, I mean.
And they still can't say what the rate, what the toll rate is going to be.
Yeah. Yeah. And you know, it's the $9, $11, you know, $20 round trip toll rate. I don't think, you know, the Department of Transportation has basically just said, well, that's outdated information. But they've never said it's wrong information.
And it's not, if it's outdated,
you know,
it's just from
an older report.
It's really not that old, though.
No. It's about a year.
And they never, you're absolutely right, Lisa. They never, ever contradicted that the numbers were their own findings and that they were legit, which is really interesting. So now they're just like, well.
It's kind of old.
But so is it going to go down? I doubt it, unless, you know, there's some kind of major push for it. And you would think they'd make that as public as they could.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's end this podcast. Talk about a couple big stories both of you are working on. Tom, well, I guess you're done working on these stories, thankfully, right? That you're it's on
fingers crossed.
Yes, we've gone through a few editing sessions, a few debates. I don't know. Would you call them arguments? I don't think arguments are too strong.
I think healthy debate.
Healthy discussions.
How about intellectual? Pugilistic exercises.
Yes.
How's that for a BS term?
So that's why the door was closed so much.
Yeah, actually.
But you have a good series coming up. It's going to air Monday, starting out Monday on All Things Considered, and then we'll have part two the next morning, Tuesday, on Morning Edition. And these stories are about something called alternative investments, and it has to do with the state pension system.
That's right. I mean, it's right now they've been called an experiment, actually, by the sitting treasurer, Janet Cowell. Experiment kind of that doesn't really tell you how much of pension money is actually put into these alternative investments. It's around $20 billion of a $90 billion fund. So it's, you know, it's like 23%. And they're these really interesting different kinds of investments that are just, they're called alternatives because they're not classic stocks and bonds. And at first they sound great, but there are a lot of questions about it because they're very complicated to run. They come with extraordinarily high fees. In fact, the SEC just did an investigation of private equity, and that's something that's often considered an alternative investment, and found that half of the 400 firms they surveyed were overcharging their clients for fees that they shouldn't be paying, and in fact, some of that amounted to fraud. And there are all kinds of questions about the returns, about what the money is going for, and also, really importantly, there are a lot of questions when you look at, you know, campaign cash coming from investment managers in alternatives and lawyers who represent them, going to our state treasurer, and over her tenure, the percentage of alternative investments has dramatically grown.
Well, and what was really interesting to me about the reports, I got a sneak peek, was that, you know, the way the pension system is controlled here in North Carolina, that it's basically, you said, the state treasurer's office, and it's only a couple states that do it that way.
Yeah, it's called the sole fiduciary model, and the state treasurer has the final go-ahead or say-so on everything. And, you know, most states, 46 states, have some kind of a panel that will include retirees, investment professionals, mm-hmm. people from the treasurer's office, the state government. In North Carolina, New York, In North Carolina, New York, Rhode Island, and Connecticut, it's just the treasurer that gets the final say. The General Assembly has a little bit of control over kind of broad ideas on where they can put money and how much of a percentage of the fund can go to certain buckets. But yeah, the elected treasurer of North Carolina easily controls the single largest pot of money in the state and can do almost anything with it.
Yeah.
Good stuff. So be sure to listen Monday, All Things Considered, and then the following morning edition. And then also we'll have this online, and you'll be hearing a lot of promotion for this series as well. So, and also another series coming up the next week, day after Labor Day, something Lisa and Michael Tomczyk has been working on all summer, a very simple topic called, the very simple topic of higher ed tuition and higher ed costs. And it just, it's you figured it all out, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, every time I sit down with the numbers, I have to get my head around them again, and it takes about 15 or 20 minutes to do that for each year. We're looking at tuition and how that's gone up in the state for the UNC system as state money has gone down. But also, something that's actually pretty hard to figure out is how much does an education actually cost? So we'll be breaking that down.
And it's something that UNC Chancellor Philip Dubois has been trying to figure out, too.
Yeah, yeah.
He was very interested in when you interviewed him, it sounded like, and what you're trying to accomplish. And he was helpful trying to get some answers to that story, because it's a question he has, too.
Oh, yeah. He sat down with us for more than an hour, and he's been trying to figure it out himself. So,
yeah, and I'm just fascinated too, just hearing you and Michael talk about it in the newsroom, all the different little side costs that are mm-hmm. in there. I mm-hmm. mean, the tuition, I always just figured that's what it cost me to go to school.
Yeah.
And it's not me, it's you know, scholarship students and different, I mean, all kinds of different programs that you guys are talking about. It's really interesting.
Yeah. Well, I hope it'll be interesting.
That'll be Tuesday, the day after Labor Day, that series gets underway. And that's it. Another show in the bag. I think we'll have Ben Bradford back with us next week. Is he going to be off vacation?
You're the boss.
I
know. You're
I have
us?
A schedule yeah. somewhere. He's just off for... Okay, you're off for a while. I'll figure it out. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.